long, long before the days of CGI and Photoshop, some fascinating and complex photographs were taken to rally public morale during World War I. They were called living photographs. Thousands and thousands of soldiers exquisitely arranged and choreographed into formations. American emblems, patriotic symbols, even the face of President Wilson. One such living photograph was taken at Camp Custer near Battle Creek. The largest production, with some 30,000 officers and men arranged into a human U.S. shield. Lewis Kaplan is here now to tell us more about these photos. He's a professor of history and theory of photography and new media at the University of Toronto and the author of American Exposures, Photography and Community in the 20th Century. Good to have you with us, Lewis.
Oh, it's great to be on the show with you.
Set the scene, Forrest. Can you describe this human U.S. shield?
Well, yeah, it consists, first of all, of 30,000 people, mostly enlisted men and all the troops that were stationed at Camp Custer. And it was taken in 1918. Yeah, it's an amazing image, but of course we're on radio here, so
sure.
I'll try to describe it. What Moll did was he...
First of all, tell us who did this. Who were the photographers who did this?
Oh, yes. Well, the photographers involved here. Arthur Moll was the photographer, and John Thomas was the choreographer. So Moll went up in a tower, usually self-built, about 70 or 80 feet off the ground, in order to get the proper bird's-eye aerial perspective, in order to have the shield come into the form that was necessary. Because on the ground, you would just have this mass of 30,000 troops, but you would have to shoot it from the exact perspective. And these images took a long time to make. Moll would have to be working with Thomas beforehand, sometimes the whole week, in order to set the stage and then know exactly where the troops would go to set up the right formation.
And that is mind-blowing to me when I think about how the formations were arranged, because the detailing is eye-popping, and they didn't have an app like Drill Book Next that helps band directors put their marching bands into those incredible formations like they do in 2015. So how did they get everybody arranged so perfectly?
How it worked was this. See, Moll would begin by tracing the desired image on the ground glass plate that was mounted on his view camera. Then, up in his tower, he would use a megaphone, body language, and a long pole with a white flag tied to the end of it in order to point to the more remote areas, because obviously, given this perspective, the bulk of the troops had to be stationed further away in the back end of the field.
Yeah.
And then he would position his helpers on the field below, and they would nail the necessary pattern to the ground using yards of tape and sometimes using lace edging. So that's how they prepared the way. And then Moll, given his experience, would be able to figure out the exact number of troops that he needed in each of these locations and where they should stand. So that's the sort of the setting up of it. And then on the day of the shoot, sometimes the troops had to stand many hours before the testing and assembling into the exactly right position to get the perspective just right. So there was some trial and error on the day of the shoot. And the key, of course, as we all know, was to get the shot where the lines of perspective would resolve themselves into these intelligible, as you say, mind-blowing images.
That is something else. And if you think about just what we take for granted, snap a picture, look at it digitally, go, no, that didn't work, do this.
Right.
None of that was there.
Yeah. Well, that's why they're called living photographs, right? I mean, the human bodies of these soldiers, they are the pixels, in a sense, that, you know, that are forming these images. And that's why we call them sometimes living formations as well.
And how were they used, and who was paying for all of this, Lewis?
Ah, well, that's a very good question. Well, you know, they weren't paid, because after all, why? Well, let's go back to your particular interested image. I mean, why were all these soldiers there? Well, they were, in a sense, training. They were all in military training facilities, either getting ready to go off to serve in Europe during World War I, or then after. Moll also took some images in 1919, after the war was over, after the Allies won, they were in the process of demobilization. So in a sense, these enlisted men in the service of our country doing a little extra service to help Mole out in order, as you say, to make these images that serve as rallying points for the troops and for the nation in the patriotic effort. Because let's not forget that in 1917, there were still a number of people in the country that did not support World War One. They were called isolationists, and they really were feeling, well, the United States is better off just staying neutral. So Mole's images, particularly in that period of 1917 and early 1918, were getting people into the right patriotic spirit to support the war effort.
And I'm interested on your thoughts of how these living photographs advanced modern photography and effects.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. They certainly advanced modern photography in the sense of the move towards the spectacular image. There is a German theorist who referred to these images, to this genre of images, as mass ornaments. And I think that's a very interesting idea. The idea being that you would take these groups of people and turn them in somehow beyond their own living selves into these aesthetic forms, that these beautiful aesthetic forms would also serve a symbolic function because, as you said, these images formed these symbolic icons like the American flag, like the Statue of Liberty, like Uncle Sam is a very funny one to see the goatee of Uncle Sam formed by thousands of troops. It's a very unusual practice, but it did in a way advance this kind of idea of mass photography for an age of mass reproduction.
When you think of the history of photography, was this one of the first times that photographs were used specifically to move the needle of public opinion?
I don't know. I mean, you could say that there's been a kind of a propagandistic function in photography for a very long time. Right. I mean, you could think about in the 19th century, you know, certain images being staged or certain sort of composite images being formed. I mean, even, you know, Abraham Lincoln, the first really photographed photographer, said that the images taken by Matthew Brady were such good publicity for him that they helped him win the election because they showed him in a kind of a presidential manner. So you can say that photography has always been serving certain kinds of publicity and even propagandistic functions. But I think what happens with Mole is how it happens on a mass scale because of the amount of people that were used in order to make these kinds of mass statements of patriotic support.
I'm interested whether, Lewis, when it came time to rally public opinion again, and that would be for World War II, was that ever tried again, or were we kind of past that?
No. These images come back. There are other photographers later on, and I talk about this in my book. For instance, there's a photographer by the name of Eugene Goldbeck, who was a Texas-based photographer, and he made a number of rallying images of this sort in the 30s and 40s. In more recent times, you also see the kind of return to this idea in there are digital photographs that also play around now. But, of course, again, now they don't really need the people there in order to make insignia or to make pictures of leaders out of pixels or out of individual photographs. And the photographs you might know of, they're called photo mosaics. The photographs of Robert Silvers is a more recent manifestation of this continuing tradition.
Well, there is certainly an emotional punch packed when you look at these and realize it's thousands and thousands of officers and men standing for probably what a very long day to get arranged into these living photographs. It was a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for sharing the background of these very, very fascinating living photographs.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And as I said, you're very lucky to be living in the state where the largest assembly of men for Mole's photograph ever took place.
Lewis Kaplan, professor of history and theory of photography and new media at the University of Toronto. His book is American Exposures. Thank you, Lewis.
Okay, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.